This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Independence Day weekend got off to a nasty start this year. A massive truck crash on July 1st claimed three lives, and it shut down I-40 for much of the day. The driver of the truck, Ronald Eugene Graybeal, is now in jail. He's charged with driving while impaired and three counts of felony death by vehicle. Police say they found marijuana, methadone, and drug paraphernalia in the truck. The Federal Motor Carrier Administration immediately began a compliance review for Graybeal's company, Hawley Transport Services of Greenville, Tennessee. And according to the agency's public records, the 10-truck, 10-driver operation has already been cited for multiple violations, including breaking driver fatigue rules 28 times in the last 2 years. The I-40 crash is the latest in a string of high-profile fatal crashes up and down the East Coast this year. A bus bound from Greensboro to New York City crashed on I-95 in Virginia. That was in May. Four people died in that crash. The driver of the bus reportedly admitted falling asleep at the wheel, though he has now pleaded not guilty, and he is awaiting trial in Virginia. Several other bus crashes prompted lawmakers in New York to call for stricter regulation of the industry. We'll talk trucks in a moment. For now, we're looking at buses, and to do that, we will talk with Jim O'Grady, a reporter for New York Public Radio, WNYC, a contributor to TransportationNation.org. He's been covering the government's bus crackdown, and he joins us from WNYC's studios in New York City. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Hi, Frank.
Jim, is this really a spike in bus crashes, or are we just paying more attention?
You know, it's an ongoing problem, accidents on the road, whether it be trucks or long-distance buses. But there has been a spike in bus accidents. There have been six major crashes on the eastern seaboard since January that have killed 25 people and seriously injured hundreds of more passengers. And part of that is because this particular segment of the bus industry, the discount bus industry, cheap trips between major cities and increasingly middle-range cities in terms of size has just grown explosively in the past 5 years.
And these are these sort of $35 from here to New York, that kind of thing.
That's right.
That sort of cheap. And they've exploded. A lot more of those are happening now. And after each of these crashes, we find out that there's been a whole slew of violations by the bus company. And then many of them apparently have satisfactory ratings from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. Now, how's that possible?
Well, it actually differs. Sometimes they have decent safety records and they get in a crash. Other times they have rather poor safety records, but they're allowed to stay on the road. You mentioned the crash in May on I-95 in Virginia. That was a company called Sky Express, whose driver's in jail right now. They had a terrible safety record. The Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration was in the process of pulling them off the road. And just tragically, that company had asked for an extension to appeal their unsatisfactory rating, which would have pulled them off the road. And DOT, or the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, allowed that extension, and it was within that time that the crash occurred.
Does the public have any way of knowing where a company is in the process? Can I go somewhere online and find out that they're in the process of being, you know, moving from satisfactory to unsatisfactory? Or how transparent is this process?
You can. You can go to the website of the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, find the ratings of particular bus companies. It's not easy. It'll take a little time, at least for me, and I'm a reporter. I cover transportation. It took me a while to get up and running and familiar with this process. And you'll have to go company by company. It's hard to get a sense of the industry as a whole. But you can check out a company. But even then, you can see their list of violations in different categories, like driver fatigue or driver not keeping logs of his trips. And it's hard to judge what is a good record. A few violations, is that satisfactory? Or several violations, does that put me in danger? It's really hard to judge. It's not easy or simple.
So
it's not like A, B, or C that you get on restaurant grades here now in New York City, which is clear.
So what is the now we're talking about the FMCSA, its parent agency, the Department of Transportation. Have they done anything in response to these crashes?
Well, yes. They've initiated a crackdown. they're giving no more appeals extensions mm-hmm. of appeals like they did to the Sky Express bus company. That's out. They are actually they could have pulled Sky Express off the road once they determined they were unsatisfactory and declared them an imminent hazard. They had been hesitant to do that in the past. Now they are not hesitant. They're pulling two or three companies off the road every couple of weeks or so it seems, when we, you know, the press releases roll into us. So they're being much more aggressive. And say here locally in New York State, the New York State troopers do crackdowns where they'll do 3,000 inspections over 2 weeks, and they'll pull hundreds of buses off the road. So, yes, there is a response, but it's hard to keep up with this industry. There's something like 4,000 companies, and it's growing all the time because it really serves a need. It gets mm-hmm. people from city to city cheaply and often quickly.
Well, we've been talking about buses, but I want to bring the trucking industry into this conversation. And joining us by phone from the Carolina Trucking Academy in Raleigh is the Academy's owner, Charlie Gray. Hello, Charlie.
Good morning.
Now, you are not a trucker yourself, but you've been operating this trucking academy for 11 years. You train a lot of drivers. Driver fatigue has been cited in a number of these cases and certainly on the record of many of these companies. How do you tackle driver fatigue?
Well, I think the concern we have with driver fatigue is real. Research has suggested that fatigue is a contributing factor in over 20% of fatal crashes, and in 52% of accidents that involve commercial motor vehicles. So it is an issue, and it is something that that will exist with I think and certainly in my opinion, training being one of the ways that. That we can address the issue.
Well, how do you address it? I mean, you can't teach somebody not to be tired. Do you teach them to recognize the symptoms and pull over? There's a lot of money at stake, a lot of bonuses at stake for people who can get, you know, the stuff there on time or a little early, right?
Well, you're correct, and we can't change that human nature aspect of it. But when it comes to driver fatigue, I think the buzzword, the catchword here is awareness. It's like heart disease, for example. As we get older and our bodies age, the concept of heart disease is something that most of us will face, but there's a great deal of emphasis being placed on awareness, the symptoms that you're trained to be aware of, and once you see those symptoms, then they lead you to take a particular action. And that same concept applies with fatigue.
Well, Charlie, what kind of training is required to get a commercial driver's license?
Well, in our state of North Carolina, there's no training required. The qualifications are you must be 18 years of age, have a driver's license, Social Security card, you must pass a DOT physical, a written test, and a driving test, but there is no training required.
Jim, at the federal level, is there any requirement to drive on U.S. highways that you be trained, or is it the same thing? If you have a license, you're licensed, and that's it.
There's a proposal for background checks and training for commercial bus drivers that DOT is pushing. It's not the state. That's not how it is yet. But when it comes to driver fatigue, there are standards. A driver, I believe, can't drive more than 11 hours out of 24. Drivers are supposed to keep strict logbooks, so spot checks can finger when they are driving more than they're allowed to by law. But drivers do get around that. They either fake the logs or they don't tell their employer they're driving for another company. Sometimes companies that get shut down because they've had found to have excess driver fatigue, they'll just reincarnate, it's called, under another name with repainted buses. And one other thing about that, there's a professor Belzer at Wayne State University who has studied this issue, and this is what he says. For every 10% raise in a driver's pay, be it a truck driver or a bus driver, you get a 40% gain in safety record. In other words, the less you make, the more incentive you have to work long hours. Better wages creates an incentive to drive within the rules.
Well, Charlie, let's talk about that. If the state doesn't require training necessarily, so they don't need a certificate from your school or anybody else's, they just need to pass that test and have a license. Are there trucking companies that pay more for a certified driver? Do they care about training?
Well, most of the reputable companies are going to require any job applicant to have and supply a certificate of training. Now, of course, that is sort of pushed down on them by the insurance companies. So that is one stopgap measure that is helping, in putting more trained drivers on the road, in that the companies are not going to hire you unless you have had some training. But training is not a requirement.
And then how about your school? I mean, if you're going to have a certified driver, I want to know they're from an accredited school. What kind of auditing do your school in particular go through?
Well, we are a licensed DNV facility. We are licensed by the DNV, and we execute and administer their 160-hour program, which includes a 50-hour classroom training, 50 hours on the yard, and actual 60 hours on the road. And we are held to those requirements by an annual audit, where the DNV actually comes into our facility and audits our student files and our records. One thing that we do here also, which is not a requirement, is that we drug test all of our students, and they are not allowed to get in a vehicle until we receive a favorable drug test result.
All right. Well, Charlie and Jim, I want to thank both of you for being on the program today.
Thank you.
Charlie Gray is the owner of Carolina Trucking in Raleigh. Jim O'Grady is a reporter for New York Public Radio, WNYC, and a contributor to TransportationNation.org. The July 1st truck crash was not the only I-40 wreck to rattle North Carolinians that week. The previous Monday, a bus veered off the road and crashed into a stand of pine trees. There were no passengers, but the driver was killed. And as word spread of who that driver was, it seemed impossible to many. It was Lorenzo Charles, college basketball hero.
It's down to 7 seconds. You can see the time. Wittenberg, oh, it's a long way.
That, of course, was the electrifying moment in the 1983 NCAA basketball championship when Lorenzo Charles snatched Derek Wittenberg's 30-foot desperation shot and scored the winning dunk for NC State, delivering an upset win over Houston. Other players in that game, Hakeem Olajuwon, Clyde Drexler, went on to stardom, but Charles spent only one season in the NBA. He played for the Atlanta Hawks, and then he played with minor league teams in Europe and South America. But for the last dozen years, he chose a career that some found surprising. He worked for a bus company. He was a bus driver for the Apex-based Elite Coach. He was on his way to pick up a group when he crashed, and authorities have yet to determine the cause. Charles often found himself ferrying local sports teams. In 2009, he was the driver for the UNC baseball team, and joining us on the line is Carolina baseball coach Mike Fox. Thanks for joining us, Coach.
You're quite welcome.
Tell us your reaction when you first heard that Lorenzo Charles was going to be your bus driver in 2009.
Well, I found out actually as we were walking to the bus for our first road trip that season. My equipment manager walked down the hill there to the stadium, and as we were all kind of packing, and said, "You won't believe who our bus driver is," and said, "Lorenzo Charles." Of course, I immediately knew who that was, and I think my first thought was, oh, great, we've got an NC State guy, driving us all season long. But, boy, that thought quickly disappeared as soon as you met Lorenzo.
What kind of relationship did he have with those players? I mean, these are guys who were playing baseball in 2009. That was 1983.
Yeah, it was amazing how it evolved. You kind of make an immediate connection with Lorenzo. He's, he's been described in a number of ways, but fortunately for me and my players and our staff, we were able to meet him personally. And as he drove his trip after trip, you could see how our players kind of evolved, that a relationship evolved, and he's just a warm, caring person. And we would go, we'd go to a restaurant for our pregame meals, and the guys would want to sit with him. He was just that type, and we ended up having a great relationship with him, not only during 2009, but in the subsequent years after that, when he wasn't driving us.
He actually scouted out some of those restaurants for you, didn't he?
He was a great bus driver. He could tell he was very well trained, and he knew all about sports teams and driving sports teams and how time was important, and they need to get to their pregame meal at this time. They need to get back to the hotel at this time. You have to be at the ballpark at this time, and he knew and understood all that. And a lot of that was his background, certainly, but. Yeah, he would. He'd find out where we were eating, and he would go ahead of time just to make sure everything was okay and the timing was right. He was extremely professional.
Now, did he talk much about that big game?
You'd have to pull it out of him, really. Of course, I wanted to talk to him about Jim Valvano more than anything else, just from the coach and me. And every now and then on the trips, we would chat a little bit. But he was so professional. He wanted to concentrate and. He didn't talk very much. You had to really kind of initiate it. I think he opened up to our players really more than me on the bus, at dinner and at our meals and such, and with our equipment manager, especially Tyson Lusk, who was very involved with Lorenzo. But he did not want to talk about that much, really, I think, for one reason or another, or he just didn't feel comfortable doing it.
Coach Fox, thanks so much for talking with us today.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
Mike Fox is the coach of UNC baseball. And that is the state of things for today. Thank you for listening. If you've got a comment about the show or want to hear an archived edition of a past program, our website is stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Alex Granados, Amber Nimix, and Isaac Davey Aronson. Anna Cassell is our intern. Robin Copley is the technical director. Managing editor Lindsay Foster Thomas. Susan Davis is our senior producer. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.